So we've been trying some new games.
We have.
We're gonna play Fabula Ultima.
Yeah, Alternate Tuesdays. It's not a joke, that's actually when we play.
Yeah, no, it is actually when we play Alternate Tuesdays.
Group character generation, a lot of fun.
Which is great, because otherwise we would be playing two games every week, and I don't have time for that. But go on about character creation and stuff.
No, the group setting creation was a lot of fun. Group character creation was great. The only complaint I have, and this is not a real complaint, is that the random name lists are great, but just putting out numbers next to them so we can roll them. I figured out how to do that, which is not, yeah, but it was a silly ad hoc mess.
Yeah. it does have a bunch of really excellent, like, you don't know what to do? Here's a prompt you can roll for that will help you come up with a character. And I really liked the way that they are all open-ended prompts. They aren't, like, restricting or super defining. It's like, roll for a personality trait your character has. And I rolled and got charming, and I was like, okay, I can roll with this. I can make a character. And they were all, like, archetypal enough that I found them thought-provoking in a good way.
Yeah, I think they really hit that sweet spot.
Yeah. And you can basically roll up a whole character, right? And then it has one of my favorite things, which is, character creation options for busy people, where there's a whole list of like pre-packaged builds that you can just go, I want to be a pirate. And then you take that. And then, like, if you don't particularly like the point allocation in the subclasses, you can just rearrange them. Very, very easy.
Or if you're a person who wants to get into the nitty-gritty, you can go to the classes. I like the it very much leans into the sort of Final Fantasy V, Final Fantasy Tactics sort of I have X levels and this job, which I think it uses really well. And every level of a job gives you an ability, whether it's another spell if you're a spellcaster, or another ability for any character. And I think there's a lot of fun mixing and matching there. It doesn't seem like there are any trap options. And the book gives a lot of advice for the GM going, hey, look at your party and don't be a fuck when making encounters. So, not in that wording, that's mine.
Yeah, it's editorializing a little bit.
Yeah. But I appreciate that it goes, hey, GMs, pay attention to your party composition and everybody does physical damage. Don't put in a physical immune enemy without a way for them to deal
Yeah.
with it. Which is something that, sometimes needs to be said, especially when dealing with something like this, which is, very matter-of-factly emulating a lot of the vibe of Japanese RPGs. And also, at least one German RPG. Shout out to Chained Echoes. And I can see some people going, oh, well, they just need to figure, they should have better party comp. And it's like, but this is a tabletop role-playing game. It's not actually a computer or console RPG.
I'm really looking forward to trying to play it. It is a game that has one of the few games I've read recently whose design I found impressive.
Oh, there's also some really excellent fan tools online for making monsters and stuff, which I really appreciated. And that's the sort of thing that you can't really pin on the game itself. But it's nice that the systems for making monsters are thoughtful enough and that fans have, that they benefit from having a monster creator online. So if you go on the Discord, it's very prominently linked, totally worth using. Like, I've been having fun doing that in between doing work I'm really supposed to be doing. So, hi, Marks.
Yeah. So the other thing that's pretty cool, so I think probably the highest praise I think I can heap on Fabula Ultima is when we were making characters, you went to the bathroom for a little bit, and then while you were in the bathroom, everybody had access to either a copy on their phone or computer or the physical book. I had my tablet. And then everyone sat and very quietly and diligently made their characters. Like, in a. It went like dead silent because everyone was busy reading the book and making their character in a way that was not like bad. It was in a way that it clearly indicated, how like when everyone's really hungry at a restaurant and the food is really good, there's the conversation just stops dead because everyone is enjoying eating.
Yeah.
It was like that. It was that kind of silence where like conversation stopped because everyone was enjoying engaging with character creation and finishing their characters. Which was a very stark contrast from the game we played previously.
Yeah, and in the group we have obviously a bunch of people. And Steve I can depend to get really into the nitty-gritty, and I can depend on his sister Katie to be so tired that she falls asleep in the book.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair to Katie, she's usually been up since like 4 a.m. and we play at 7 p.m. Just for context, she works really early. She drives an hour to come play. We play at 7 o'clock at night, and it ends at like 9. So she's not even getting home until 10, which is pretty late if you get up super early. I'm happy she's there, is basically like the context
Yes,
for that.
we love Katie and Steve and are so happy they drive the hour to come game with us. This is not a case of her being an unattended player or anything. It's just that, no, she is physically tired. And so a lot of times she'll just sort of be like, okay, somebody needs to help me with this. And sort of be like, okay, I want to play, but I don't have the energy to really engage with it. And Fabula Ultima, she was able to. So that is high marks for both engagement and readability.
Yeah, I was impressed with that, as other character creations have been much more painful. I've never seen that group knuckle down on character creation like that before. Welcome to Bonus Experience, a podcast with a deeper look at the play experience and the finer details of running and writing games. And we are queer people speaking with authority about games. And yes, we swear, die mad about it. I am your poll star host, the person who's always here. My name is Monica. I presume that you know this by now, but if you're just tuning in, hello and welcome. I am a tabletop industry designer and developer. I've been in charge of a bunch of books you may have heard of and a bunch of more you haven't. I have a credits list that's as long as a CVS receipt. If you want to find out, I don't know, PM me somewhere and I'll tell you. That's me. Who are you?
I'm Heather. I'm Monica's horrible wife. That is a statement of power and not self-deprecating.
Oh, okay.
I'm horrible in the way like a cackling hag in the swamp is. I also write games, some with Monica, some separately from Monica. I'm very happy to have worked on Exalted Essence, for example. And I also run games very often. This is my favorite hobby, and I run usually multiple games a week, if not also. And sometimes, these days, I sometimes get lucky and also get to play in one. That's a game with a lot of people with kids, so that's very hit or miss for availability.
Today, we're going to attempt to talk about the design principle that participation is the game.
Yes, because if people aren't playing the game, they're not playing the game. It's a tautology.
Yeah.
Also, this is our second attempt at recording this.
Yeah. Yeah, the first one got fucked up, so we're doing it again. So, when you are playing a role-playing game, you don't get a finite product out of it, unless you are particularly playing something like, I don't know, Microscope, which builds a timeline, or The Quiet Year, which builds a map. It is not a map-building game, it builds a map. It is a game with a particular objective. Please stop using it as a generic map-building game. it's not. However, you do get a finished product out of that. You get a map, right? But for most games, the thing that you get when you play an RPG is the experience of playing the RPG. Pretty much every role-playing game, from the crunchiest trad game to the fluffiest story game, is about the experience of playing the game. So when you are doing this, you need to focus on your mechanics to make sure that you are creating the intended experience without removing the player from participating. And I'm putting the emphasis on player because you can do all kinds of bad shit to characters. You can do all kinds of bad shit that you want to characters, but the player has to continue to participate. And you are, of course, going to hear a whole bunch of stuff about us talking about not killing off characters, because that's can remove the player from participating. So.
And you shouldn't kill players because that's murder.
That's illegal, yeah. That causes other problems. It's illegal, to say nothing of the trauma of taking human life. So don't do that either. Would you like to launch into some of the things that you think are good or bad about this sort of thing? Games that do it well, mechanics that you were like, absolutely the fuck not.
Sure. So I think that probably the worst example, like the worst case scenario, is when you have a game specifically with complicated character generation that has regular opportunities for characters to be taken out of the game, either permanently or for a long time of actual gameplay, with little recourse. And here's a simple example, Shadowrun. Certain versions of Shadowrun can be pretty deadly. Shadowrun character creation, especially if you're not just grabbing a template out of the book, can take a very long time across most editions. And so you have a big possibility where somebody spends a significant amount of time making the Shadowrun character, potentially hours and hours, enters a game, and in the second scene, gets shot in the head by a ganger, their character dies, and then they're looking at least, even if the GM's like, okay, we're going to work your character into the next scene, a long period of physically making the character. To make matters even more complicated, these games often do not have a explicit, hey, this is how you get characters back up and running quickly. And then issues like, oh, does this character get extra resources to reflect those resources that may have been gotten after the game started? Which can make all sorts of practical problems. This is also a classical problem with high-level D&D characters. You have your soul ripped out by a lich and fed through a paper shredder. Your character is turbo dead. So what do you do, right? And there's been various ways to address this. And like you sometimes see OSR or old school Game of Thrones, well, the answer is just very quick character creation, just have them pop right back in, which can work, but also has many other issues in it to it. And there's often more of a convention of the play space rather than the games itself.
Yeah, I mean, it was just jumping in to say that I totally agree that if you want lethality to be an element of your game, especially if you're trying to mimic like an old school style of game, that making a new character needs to be the fastest and easiest thing you could possibly do. What game were you talking about when we did this? This is the second time recording this. What was the game you were talking about where like there's a game that specifically has a rule where if you lose a character, they're behind the door in the next room?
It's one of the OSR games, and I can't remember which one.
Okay.
But that's an example of a game where, okay, this is a lethal game. You should be able to roll up a character in 5 minutes, and explicitly that no matter what's going on, the new character is right there, so that player gets right back in the game. And sometimes that sounds silly,
but it's
engaging with the real-world issue of, hey, this is a high-lethality game, and people want to play the game. And coding that in the rules is fantastic, and now I wish I remember what game it was.
All right, so if you remember, audience, what game that is, you should let us know in the comments. And by in the comments, I mean post it on my Discord or on our Tumblr or send us an email. I'll talk about that at the end. I love that rule. I think that's really great. I think if you're going to play any sort of like meat grinder of a game, that's something like that should be involved. We also talked about player elimination mechanics in board games, right? And how in board games, that's also a similar problem. Because like board games also kind of have the same thing going for them, right? Where participation is the game. You are playing this board game. And if you are doing anything else, you are not engaging with the game, right?
Oh, totally.
So if you have like a... Similarly, in a board game, if you have a board game where there's player elimination mechanics, where a player can be eliminated really early and the game takes like 8 hours to play, don't fucking do this. Because then that other person has to figure out what to do at the... play the 8 hour long game event, right? You want games that progress really quickly and like get you back, either the round resets or you get back in pretty quickly if you are eliminated early. Similarly, with things that take players out of play short term, I'm talking about status effects like stunned or paralyzed or whatever, where your character literally cannot do anything, because it creates kind of the same situation where that player then has to do something with themselves while their character cannot do anything. So by preventing the character from continuing to do things in the narrative or the, you know, engage with the mechanics, whatever, you have presented a situation where the player themselves cannot continue to participate. And that can cause all kinds of problems.
Yeah, it's also a big feel that some players will find their attention wandering no matter what they try to do.
Mm-hmm.
It often has an outsized mechanical effect, especially because if it's in combat, oftentimes games assume that player characters are more powerful or more complicated than NPCs, less adversary characters. And so it has a asymmetrical effect versus stunning a GM character. And it's just not fun. And sort of I would almost say the worst version of this is games with real penalties for being, like serious penalties for being wounded or injured, and then long recovery times, where it's like, oh no, your character can't do anything for the next 3 in-game weeks. And there are some games where that's built into the game, like I think Pendragon does, the troop play of Ars Magica can deal with it, where it's like, oh no, if you're, like, there was times to decide an option for, oh, this character is unavailable, right? And that's great. A lot of games don't have that. And the White Wolf Onyx Path games are often a prime example, where it's like, this wound is going to take 3 weeks to heal. Until then, you had a considerable penalty to your rolls, and also, if you're that much closer to death, if you do get in a fight, right? And that's bad. And I say this as somebody who has played and enjoyed many of those,
yeah.
Going, oh, wait, so Andre's character is supposed to be laid up with a broken arm for the next 3 weeks. So do we jump ahead? Is he, like, what do we, like, that doesn't make sense for the narrative of the game. And usually there was some rule kludge or shim done to get past that to make the game playable, which is always a bad sign.
Yeah, in my experience, generally when there's rules like that where it's like, it takes 12 weeks to recover all 4 lethal levels of damage, and it's just like, we're just gonna ignore that, right? We're gonna hand wave that time. I'm gonna be down for the count for like a session, and then coalesce later, right? Like, ultimately what happens is when you write those rules that knock players out of the game for a period of time via the vehicle of their character, you create situations where the people engaging with your game are encouraged to ignore the thing you wrote. And I think that's a fail state.
it's not good.
Yeah, it's not good. I just want to kind of go off on, like, no rule is... Not every rule set is perfect. Like, even games that are really good, no rule set is perfect. And there's always going to be things that you don't particularly like, or they don't really fit your play style. And as we say around here, change it if you want to, and that's perfectly fine. But you want to avoid things that the majority of people are going to look at that and go, no, I'm not engaging with that, sorry. And the magic bullet for that is to avoid things that remove players from continuing to participate. If you've ever had the experience of playing, and I'm just going to say it, a D&D game where your character got taken out real early in the fight, and then you had to sit on your hands for the next 2 hours, I think you know what we're talking about. This is unfortunately a fairly common experience.
Or, even in 4th edition, the best D&D. Mm-hmm. Getting hit by a stun effect one turn, being stunned, and then getting hit by a stun effect the next turn.
Oh,
if
yeah.
If a game lasts for average 3 to 5 rounds, it's an enormous amount of the fight. We're just going, welp. And it's one of the reasons that, like, that's another place where this is a game we liked, but I also house-ruled the hell out of. Because, like, okay, these stun effects are miserable. People are happier if they get blown up than if they get stunned. So I toss it out, put something else on there. Because, again, at least it felt like it was moving more towards the completion of a fight. If a character got knocked down. Or unless there's an obvious heal, oh, well, we heal the character. When a character is stunned, unless, like, it becomes very frustrating. And even if there is you get back up, you're no longer stunned action somebody else can take, because it takes up their action, it ends up being, just a wholly feel-bad experience. I can see stun actions being, wholesale stun actions being more doable. There are a couple games where you control a bunch of guys at once. Mm-hmm. So if one of those guys gets stunned, not a big deal. You could adapt this to the old 40K role-playing game only work, because you had squad mates. One of your squad mates gets stunned and can't help instead of yourself, right? And there are ways to do it, but I think if you're going to have a full-on you're stunned, you have to be very conscious of how it works. Because, again, not playing the game fucking sucks.
Yeah, and the thing we kind of talked about for a good bit was that it creates a situation where players are then forced to self-entertain. Which ties strongly into my point about character death. Even with the character is in the next room thing, that sort of alleviates things for a little bit, but, like, you then have the players sitting out for the duration of that fight if they lose their character early. Even if they're potentially making a new one, right? The good thing about, like, your character is behind that next door is that during that whole fight, while everyone else is doing something else, you can be making your next character. Right. In games where that doesn't happen, then you have a situation where the player is forced to self-entertain. And I think we talked a bit about, like, disruptive behavior coming from boredom. And that can even happen with, like, short-term status effects, like stunned or paralyzed or whatever, that prevents players from continuing to play with their Borbo. And you don't want your players to ever be bored.
Yeah, it's just bad. Like, there may be some game where, like, engaging with boredom or enduring it for part of it is intentional. Like, I'm not doubting that, right? But usually, like, other than that, which is a very kernel case scenario, you want to avoid that in games, you know? And this is because boredom and non-engagement propagate more non-engagement, which is not what you want in games, right? Like whatever game you're playing, that's bad.
Yeah. The root cause of a lot of player disruptive behavior is either boredom or lack of trust. If you have a guy acting out, it's probably one of these two things. They are either really bored or they don't trust you. And, like, the GM trust, we have so many bonus experience episodes about being a better GM and why you should not violate your player's trust. And that's one of the ways that you get very disruptive player behavior. The other way is sheer fucking boredom. And I really think that designers, and I'm going to address the designers listening to this, that, like, when you are making a game, a traditional game, any kind of traditional game where there is a turn order and there is downtime between when players take their actions, you need to be paying attention to how long that turn time can be. And you need to consider how long it could possibly go. So if one person's turn can take up to 15 minutes because of the number of decisions they have to make, then you need to, like, make sure that there are lots of ways to keep the other players from getting super fucking bored, because when you have 5 people and turns that can take up to 15 minutes, that is an hour and 15 minutes for one round. Like, you really kind of got to be cognizant of that sort of thing. And I don't know how often people who are making those games actually take the time to time how long that is, and you should put it in front of someone who's never done it before and see how long it takes them to do it, because most of the people who are doing this are not the people who are writing it. They're the people who are seeing it for the first time.
Yeah, or the playtest players who have been playing it since the first thing and have gotten very good at playing it very quickly, which can be a very rewarding experience for them, but not helpful for going, hey, how long does combat actually take in this?
Yeah. Do you have any personal experience with people acting out because they were fucking bored, because they were stunned or they lost their character early or whatever?
I think probably the worst examples I have, honestly, from when I was a teenager, may very well have involved marijuana or alcohol on the part of the players. But you did have somebody literally like going, I don't care, just do something, or like saying what they were going to do in their turn. Mm-hmm. And it just is like, it's just a lubricant for bad behavior. And again, even away from those teenage experiences, like with people I play now, adults who I trust, love, and care for, you can very easily get somebody who is just gets to the point where they're self-entertaining because they're at the end of the initiative queue and they haven't had anything to do.
Yeah, and a lot of people in our current groups, and I'm going to fully include myself in this, are self-entertaining in a way that is non-disruptive, right? This is why I object to people being like, don't be on your phone during game. And it's like, well, there's time to self-entertain and they're doing it non-disruptively, then let them self-entertain non-disruptively. Like, there's nothing wrong with scrolling Twitter when it's not your turn.
Yeah.
Or knitting or crocheting or drawing or, you know, hand sewing or, you know, other things that you can do quietly. Painting a miniature. All those things are perfectly acceptable things to self-entertain with that are not going to disrupt the rest of the game.
I will say, I think there's an easier transition from doing a creative thing to getting back in the game than there is from engaging with social media or reading like an unrelated article and getting back in the game.
I only get annoyed with that kind of self-entertaining behavior when the gap between the actions is so small. Like, I've had people start like surfing their phones and then it come right back around to them like within a minute, and it's just like, stop. You were trying to self-entertain when you needed to pay attention, right? Like, because the gap between the two times, between your actions, was not so long that you had time to get invested in a Tumblr long post, right? Like,
right. Or when it's like, oh, you're being attacked in like, say, Exalted, and there's a bunch of decisions you're about to have to make,
right,
as a reaction. And that's like, hey, like, that's probably the worst case. And sometimes people are trained by bad games, or whether game is in game sessions or bad games and games that don't reward players paying attention, to go, hey, whatever, and that sucks. And then you sort of have to come to an understanding, but hey, please don't do that during the game. Get the person to pay attention in the game. And I think one of the problems is nobody wants to be called out like, hey, you're not paying attention and not engaging, please do that.
Mm-hmm.
That usually by itself does not get engagement. It makes the person feel attacked.
Yeah. Especially if, like, you know, they were legitimately deeply bored.
Yeah.
And didn't have a creative thing to do, you know? And, like, and in the instance where someone did get invested, had enough time to, they didn't have, like, a knitting needle or whatever to play with, or dice to stack, or we're playing Exalted, and D10s just don't, like, you can't make a little castle out of D10s like you can with E6s.
Much harder.
They're not cubes.
We know one of those angles is wrong.
Yeah. If there's nothing else for you to do, and it has been long enough for you to get invested in a Tumblr long post, like, honestly, the worst thing that happens is that you kind of have to recap where they are and what's going on. And part of that is why I particularly like games, we're playing Exalted Essence with a bunch of people, where, like, you are encouraged to kind of pay a little attention the entire time, because the initiative can be passed to you, and, like, you have a lot of reactions you can take, and there are a lot of things you can do to help boost your allies. You can make stunt dice. Like, when Dee and I were kind of putting that kind of core combat system together, one of my big things was, like, give people something to do constantly. Give them a reason to at least keep a little bit of an ear on the game. And when you have things like, oh, it could be someone's going to hand this initiative to me at any time, you know, I can volunteer to take it, I have a bunch of things that I can hand out to people in the case of success or failure, then you give people reason to not to just, like, you know, scroll through pictures or whatever on their social media instead of, like, getting invested in an article or getting in an argument or whatever, because there's a baked in reason to keep half an ear on the game, right?
Yeah.
And this is something that I truly dislike about playing the D&Ds, and I'm gonna throw 4th edition in there too, where, like, there's not a ton of reason for me to keep paying attention when it is not my turn. Where I can't just tune back in and sort of, like, look at the board and catch up on where we are when it does come around to be my turn. There's, like, not a ton of mechanical incentive for players to, you know, not check out completely.
Yeah, and I think that that runs into the issue, like, or is part of the thing is, like, there's not always, you can't always solve this problem at the table, right? Mm-hmm. Games making it easier not to run into, even if you can't get rid of it altogether, is just better. Like, when it comes to, like, okay, a lot of games, it's fine to split up characters to different scenes, right? Which can then be a problem, which people are like, well, I'm not in the scene, I'm not, and they zone out, right? And, you know, that's one of the cases where some people get very upset if that person then is on their phone or doing something else, and it's like, where's that balance? And then Nobilis goes, no, all players can be in all scenes, even if the character isn't there. Like, it's, like, some element of that character, the Nobilis you're playing, the powers behind, that representing something in the world, so it has a weird supernatural way to be involved, or even just thoughts of the character, like, that's built into the game. And that doesn't fit all games, but the consideration of, hey, what happens when the party splits up mm-hmm. is good to have in the game. Some games, like, there's a couple games that will go out and say, hey, splitting parties rough in the GM, don't do it. And a lot of groups decide that anyway, mm-hmm. both on a level, whether on a level of, oh, we don't want to get ambushed separately and killed, or on a level of, oh, no, it's just rude to do that to the GM. And I don't necessarily think that's a problem, but it's nice that, like, when people take consideration of it, that's nice. And if you're running a game, it also behooves you to consider that, even if the answer is, sometimes it doesn't work out.
Yeah. I was also trying to think of, like, this doesn't really apply to games like Dread or Ten Candles, where kind of the point is to play a brief, self-contained story in which characters die, because once your character is eliminated in either of those stories, that's kind of part of the experience, right? Like, people are going to die off. That's part of playing the game. And they are both games intended to be resolved in a short period of time and not to be played over a long period of time. Like, they're not campaign games.
And they're also better at keeping a high intensity of attention on people's attention for a comparatively shorter period of time. The same is true of Bluebird Bride, for instance, where the whole point is to constantly be present and experience that. And across a lot of other role-playing games, especially traditional games, you're going to be playing for potentially a much longer period of time across multiple sessions, too. And so you can't have that intensity of attention all the time. That's okay. It's just avoiding the problem when that drops out to the point where people feel disengaged.
Right.
Or where you have to, every other scene, you're like, okay, this is what's going on. Guys, okay, here, no, we left that scene. You know, like, we're in this scene now. No, we're not in that area anymore. We went to the bar or whatever.
I don't, like, Bluebeard's Bride is about playing a bunch of aspects of one person's psyche. And I think your like, aspect can get destroyed, but I think you just get, like, fucked up and then you don't have access to a bunch of your other moves. And you're still kind of haunting the game because you're kind of representing some deep psychological trauma. So I don't think, if I'm remembering correctly, didn't happen in the game I played. If I'm remembering right, it's not fully a player elimination mechanic. Right. It's a weird, like, you can, and it's sort of a weird psychological last stand. Like, you get to, if that happens, you do something, and then, like, your aspect of the psyche breaks. And, like, the whole party, because you're basically the mind of one person, is all fucked at the end anyway, usually. So, like, you almost never escape from the horror. Like, your character, as in the person all five of you are playing, is doomed. And that's, like, it's like the ghost story, and that's sort of the thing. Like, you're not, we're doing this together.
Right. My point is, with that, or Dread, or how many candles is it?
10.
Yeah, or 10 candles.
Not 16. That's something very different.
Yeah. My point was that they have a real benefit when it comes to intensity of attention. Because that is what a lot of this player elimination stuff comes down to, is it attenuates people's ability to pay close attention or to be engaged. Mm-hmm. Those games, because you sort of know where they're going, and they're going to build intention and stakes and fraughtness until the end, have the benefit of foisting a limited set of time to really hit hard, versus a lot of other games where you're going to have ebbs and flows, and that's natural. And the key is how to make the most of the time you have, and how not to have people clock too far out.
Right.
But, like, let's say you're running a six-hour game, mm-hmm. which is a pretty, like, for most adults, a pretty long session.
Yeah, point. I was like, phew, 6 hours, that is... Now an endurance feat for me.
Yeah, that's a whole Saturday, like, you set it aside.
Yeah.
Like I do this sort of game with the folks I do playtesting with for my mecha game. And that's a case where I want people to be engaged the whole time, but I understand if it's somebody, it's not somebody strong, they're not under attack, like intact, they're not directly engaged, they're out of resources. Like, I'm going to be more understanding of somebody. I need to be more understanding of somebody checking their phone or being distracted by something else, because attention is going to ebb and flow.
Yeah. The other common, I know that there's probably going to be a bunch of people who like roll up to this episode and are just like, well, I just let people play an NPC when their character dies early in my D&D games, problem solved. And it's like, yeah, sure, that's a solution, but it's not in the game itself. It's not part of the core rules. There's no baked in incentive to continue to do this. And I think that's a good house rule, actually, like playing an NPC or something else similar to that, where you keep the player engaged. And that does, you are correct, that does solve the problem, but it's like not, that is a patch that you added, that is a fan-made mod, that's not in the game itself, so it's not a defense.
Oh yeah, there's a lot of really excellent fan-made patches for things.
Uh-huh.
What you need to understand is that is something you did, not a thing in the game. So
right.
Here's an example from a high lethality game that at least has high intensity team engagement, and that is Delta Green.
Okay.
I play in a game theoretically on Mondays of it. This is the game with lots of people with kids, so very theoretically, and so potentially very high lethality, right? You can have horrible things happen to your character on a regular basis. Violence or character life ending experiences are assumed to happen at some point, or characters having their mind destroyed or taken over. Very possible.
Mm-hmm.
And character creation in Delta Green from the book takes a minute, because you have to make decisions like, what's your character's background? Like, why do they have skills that are useful for fighting the forces of unremitting outer horror? How do they get here now? Like, all the specifics of what percentages do they have and what skills, because it's a percentage-based system.
Mm-hmm.
And that could theoretically be a nightmare. Now, our GM, and in fact the Delta Green community, make sure there are lots of, like, there's literally just a pile of, here's characters you can play. Like, just grab one, give it a name. Now you're an ex-Navy SEAL who had a horrible experience that led them to find out about the secret world, joining Delta Green and fighting a sequel. And my GM basically does the, if you get killed off, your replacement character very quickly arrives as backup in the next scene. And there's also now a really great random character generator online that also has a just generate me a character mode,
mm-hmm,
that can be used for that too. And that's fantastic, which means that if somebody gets melted by an inconceivable horror, or gets shot by cultists, or gets themselves infected with brain-eating bacteria, they can very quickly be back in the game. And so it's not practically a problem. But that's all stuff that's exterior to the game itself, right? The community did that. The GM does that. Way to go, Andrew. He doesn't listen to this, but because he doesn't listen to podcasts, but so
that's okay. I'll forgive him.
But it, like, that's all exterior stuff. That's like the play an NPC rule.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe more games should think about that, but that's something worth considering. Like, it goes in line with hearing about people playing, oh, this is a deadly game, so we know to bring backup characters. That's almost all learned player behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And there may be some games or some modules that tell people, hey, you should make backup characters, but that's very much the exception, not the rule.
Yeah. I actually happen to have my copy of Bluebeard's Bride within arm's reach, so I was looking at it, and yes, a aspect of the character can shatter, I was right. But it's still, I was also right that it's not strictly a player elimination mechanic, because that would be weird for that game. If you would like to hear me play in a excellent AP of Bluebeard's Bride, it is on the Story Told. We did that as like a little Halloween event. It's very fun, it's very scary, and I'm there, and I can't get over I just respond to being scared by trying to be funny, so there are a bunch of very good tension breaks where I do make some pretty good jokes. So if you enjoy that, then I highly recommend you go listen to that episode, and I'm sure Margaret will remind me to put that in the show notes when we finally release this. Did we talk about games that are like really excellent examples of things that don't eliminate players?
Not really.
Okay. Well, let's do that for a bit.
So there are a lot of games now that have your character can't die. Unless you as a player are okay with it.
Mm-hmm.
And this is, I generally think, is makes a better default than, oh, rolls came up bad, your character died. But, and in some groups, it is sort of the default now, but that's very much an emergent thing.
Mm-hmm.
But like Tenra Bash Zero, the Japanese tabletop RPG that is one of the first sort of Japanese, uniquely Japanese games that got brought over to English, is an example of that, which is a lot of people's first example of that. Games like Fabula Ultima, which we were gushing about at the beginning of this, specifically has a, hey, if you lose, something bad happens, but you talk about it, and usually it's not usually, oh, the characters are dead. That's becoming more of a rule in a lot of Onyx Path games. It's a notable difference between Exalted 3rd Edition and Exalted Essence. And so I think it's much better that the default is moving away from, oh, you died and you're out, right? Obviously it doesn't stop the, oh, well, you're out of this fight, but it's better than the alternative, right?
I mean, Essence went to the full extent of being like, you know, we talked about, like, you don't die unless you're out. So, like, what happens when you get knocked down? That's so silly. Well, when you get knocked down, it's sort of like in a bunch of team video games, you, like, lay on the ground with the alert over your head, and everybody has to, like, help you get back up. And there's a very specific mechanic for getting a downed player back up.
There's actions you can take. Now, that's basically, like, back that, oh, you, even when you're out of the fight, there's still stuff you can do. There's a bunch of games that do things like that. And if in a game, if you're in a game that has fights or conflicts where people can be putatively taken out, it's good to have those, right? Mm-hmm. The idea that, oh, 0 hit points, you're out of the fight, even if your character is not in danger of being destroyed, is still like, well, especially for longer, more complex fights, it's like, great, I have nothing to do. Mm-hmm. And it's nice when rules go, wait, no, you as the player still deserve to have some impact or something you can do. Even, and sometimes it's just, oh, you can take these meta actions or spend your out-of-game points, which I think is, again, much better than nothing. And then other games like Exalted Essence, there's a couple. I know there's other games.
Mm-hmm.
There's a Final Fantasy fan game that specifically gave, oh, when you're down, your character can have an action. Those are good things, both to keep player engagement, avoid boredom, and also just to sort of keep the idea that, no, you just because you went to 0 hit points doesn't mean you don't deserve to play the game.
Yeah.
That's it.
Together, we will bring traditional game design into the 21st century. Thanks everyone for listening. It's time to do the closing. BXP is brought to you by the Misdirected Mark Network.
Bing!
Thank you. Become a BXP patron! Patrons get an extended cut of every episode, episodes early, and a special place to hang out on our Discord. You can support us for as little as $1 a month. And if you'd rather support BXP without Patreon, you can subscribe on Ko-fi instead. ko-fi.com/bonusexp. Or buy our stuff. Go to bxpcast.com/bxpswag and check out our merch page. And if you're interested in buying BXP-themed things, don't forget BXP is sponsored by Nerdy Kepi. You can get all kinds of rad queer swag, like dresses with pockets patterned within the colors of the trans pride flag, and you can get cool leggings, and you can get all kinds of really neat shoes. They also have the exclusive Kickstarter-funded Exalted Essence bags, which have a bunch of really cool art from the book. All of us own them. You can fit 4 Exalted books in there. There's a video of me doing that posted on their website. Unfortunately, those are not valid with the code, but you should still buy one anyway. Use code BXPCAST to check out for 10% off, which never expires. So if you're like, man, that dress with pockets is kind of pricey, but I also want these pair of cool shoes, also kind of pricey. I'm going to have to wait for 2 Fridays to get paid. You can use it over and over again. Please do it. Please support a small business owned by some cool queer folks. And remember, saying nice things is always free. So leave us a good review on Apple Podcasts, Podbean, Google, Stitcher, Spotify, wherever, and help us get more listeners. You can also just excitedly tell your friends or post about it on the socials if you're still doing that. Are people still doing?
I don't know.
If you like Bonus Experience, you'll also like Pandas Talking Games, queer gamers talking about tabletop role-playing games and making outtakes. Join Pandas, Fitl, and Senda every Wednesday answering listener questions about playing, running, and designing TTRPGs. Get cozy and let's talk about games. If you want to hear more of us, you can find us at bxpcast.com, part of the Misdirected Mark Network.
Bing!
You can send us an email if you remember the name of that game we were talking about earlier, or if you think there are other games that we should have mentioned on the show that do either an excellent job or a terrible job. You can email us at bonusexpcast@gmail.com. I would love a reprieve from spam emails trying to ask me to optimize my SEO with some of the most impressive typos I've seen. We are also Bonus Experience on Tumblr. That's one word. You can find us there. I don't remember to update it, but we sure are there. If you want to hang out, I am on Discord. Bonus Experience community is open to everyone. You can go to tinyurl.com/bxpdiscord, which will take you right there. Make sure you pop in and say hello and introduce yourself in the introductions channel. Heather, where can they find you if they're looking for you?
Well, I'm also on the BXP Discord. You can find me at Twitter and Blue Sky as @Snatopus. And you can find me on Tumblr as Plague of Frog. I mostly retweet other people's stuff, but it's usually cool stuff, so might be worth it. Sometimes there will be game design stuff. I'm very approachable on Twitter. And if you're a dick on the BXP Discord, I do have the power to ban you, so don't do that. I'll do it. I have a gun.
It's a family-run operation.
Yes.
If you are looking for more of me, I am Dice-Wizard on both Blue Sky and Tumblr. I don't really use Blue Sky very much because just now I've started having enough people to make checking it worthwhile. But the more people that follow me, the more I'll be willing to post there. I do post on Tumblr a lot. I reblog a lot of things. And I also just like regularly talk about game design and stuff and not posting about Baldur's Gate 3. If you want to hear more of me, though, I'm also a sometimes guest of the Eternal Mooncast talking about my other special interest, Sailor Moon, which can be found at eternalmooncast.com, as well as the systematic understanding of everything at exaltcast.com. All right, I think that covers everything. All right, everybody get out. It's lunchtime. I should probably figure out something to eat, I guess.
We should. Food's good.
Yeah. All right. Change it if you want to.
Change it if you want to. Do I have to do this? Ugh, fine. Bonus Experience is written by Monica, and edited by Margaret. Our logo and art is by Nino Studios. Find her on Facebook and Instagram. Our theme song is Reuse Noise with the Light by CDK, and is used under the Attribution Non-Commercial Creative Commons license. BXP is part of the Misdirected Mark Network. Okay, there, I read it. Now, bye!